This is David Butler, Real 17. Now, what happened on board HMS Butler? You were doing this training role. You were establishing, re-establishing authority on the mess deck, the engineering mess deck.
Yeah.
What else happened on the
And I used to go down in the ballrooms on the off watches, and I had two young lads used to come down with me, both trainee engine room artificers. And I upset one of them one night because he lived ashore and his drawings weren't up to scratch. So he said, he asked the chief ERA if he could go ashore for them after the dog watch at 8 o'clock. And the chief said, "Oh, you better go down and see Enemy Butler." He said, "He's in charge of the watches tonight." And so I said, "No." I said, "You've got some drawings to do." I said, "Your drawings are not up to scratch." So I wouldn't let him go. And anyway, he didn't come down for the middle watch like he should have done. And so next morning, I reported him to the chief ERA, kept it in the branch, and the chief ERA stopped his leave for 3 days. As a punishment. It was, it's for his own benefit, because one of these days that chap just shortly afterwards that chap would be a chief petty officer, probably in charge of the engine room or the boiler room, and if he didn't know his drawings, then he didn't know where things were going wrong. And this is why I was pretty strict on training, because I had a strict training when I'd done it, and it stood me in some good stead, and I felt that everybody should do the same type of thing. And it proved it a bit later on, because we was going out on an exercise one morning, and as I said earlier, you go out for 3 or 4 days sometimes, and other days you're in and out all day. It's all according to what the exercises are, because we're the training ships. And I had this petty officer mechanician, who was come down, and he was going to get his boiler ticket this morning. And it was his turn to take the ship out. And I stood behind him while he flashed up the boilers at 4 o'clock in the morning. And then we'd done all the necessary drills that were required for getting steam into the engine room and one thing and another. And then especially Judeman closed up. And then it was a case of wait until the captain on the bridge sent the message down, move the engines and all this jazz, half a stern, full a stern, whatever the case may be. And as we only had one screw, we had to be very careful. And this particular time, it was half a stern. And as he'd moved the fuel pump handle, the centre greasing nipple flew out, and hot pouring oil, hot oil came out of the exit of it, and it all went down his arm. And I had to tell him to say, "Shut down the starboard boiler." It was the starboard one. Shut down the starboard boiler, and I got some bits of rag and I rammed them up against his valve to stop the oil coming down. And then the lads in the boiler room with him, they all went into their drill mode. The petty officer informed the engine room that we'd got a problem with the boilers and we'd be shutting down the starboard boiler. The lad on the starboard boiler, he got told to go and switch off and isolate the fuel pump with the valves that are situated at the back in the fueling system in the back of the boiler room. And it was carried out, and it was all done in less than 2 minutes. And we couldn't go to sea then. We had to tell the engine room had to tell the captain, and the engineer come down, and the chief ERA came down, and they saw what was happening. And then we all got recommendations and one thing and another. Not on paper, but, big thank yous and that. And then we had to go back alongside. And then we had to inform the CNC, or the flag officer ship's training, sea training, that what had happened. And we got let off that day. We didn't have to go to sea that day. And then the captain sent for me at 10 o'clock, and I explained to him what had happened with the engineer. I explained to him what had happened. And he said, "Right." I said, "I shall expect you up here," he said, "at 12:30, and you and I will share a pint of ale," he said. And so I went up the captain's cabin, and he gave me a pint of ale, which was most welcome. And other than that, it was just a normal, everyday thing. You went in and you went out, as I said, with the thing. The only thing that we could do, which most other the ships in the Portland Squadron can do, and the most other ships in the Navy can't, is that, down in Portland there's a place that they call the Roads, the Portland Roads. It's shallow water. But we was lucky enough that we were such a small ship that we could skip over it. And one day after we'd finished work, exercising out at sea, we got told that a nuclear boat was coming in, a nuclear submarine was coming into Portland Harbour. Well, when that happens, you can't enter harbour 2 hours beforehand, and you can't enter harbour 2 hours afterwards.
Now, why not?
I can only say that somewhere along the line they may be doing security checks and things like that. I don't really know. It's something that I didn't even know that until the engineer told us. He said, the captain explained it over the tannoy. He said, we've got to go across the roads, and I think we've got to be in by 6 o'clock. And we're talking perhaps 5 o'clock. We made it. We flew across these roads, as you might say, and we just made it before the 2 hours was up, prior to the nuclear Conqueror, I think it was. I think somebody was Conqueror came in. And then, of course, the other ships, you see, they had to stay out until gone 10 o'clock at night. So we was lucky there.
Any other incidents?
No, I don't think so. It was just a normal, mundane, sea. You went to sea daily. Some weeks it was occasional. You stopped at sea two or three nights because of the exercise for the passing out ship that required you.
We did have one instance
where we had the Royal Yacht Britannia down. And they was acting as a hospital ship, but they also had to take charge of the exercise on the day, and the captain and the admiral of the Royal Yacht Squadron had to do some training as well, because this was all new to them, for them to take charge of an exercise. But they got through it all right, as far as I know.
What were the exercises like generally? Just give us a brief outline of what they were.
Well,
like.
you'd have sea exercise. Some of your sea exercises would be firing the mortars, the big tubular mortars that you had on the stern. And one of the things that we used to do those over the roads in a special area of Portland. But you could guarantee that whilst you was there, merchant ships used to cross over this area. It was a restricted area. But it don't matter to merchant ships. They don't care about them type of things. They want to get from A to B. And sometimes we'd be in the middle of a firing exercise and you'd have to stop it because there was a merchant ship coming across. And then other times you'd have fire drills, damage control, what they call damage control, where mainly the engine room department was involved then. If a torpedo, a bomb, a collision with a ship, you got hold in the side or something like that, or there was a fire on board, it was down mainly to the engineering department to put it out and take charge and to shore up the hole, block up the hole in the ship's side, or the splinters that might be coming from a burst shell or something like that. Isolate, make sure you'd got seawater so that you could put the fires out, and all sorts of things. There was enough wood lying around. You'd got enough wood, and you'd got enough uprights to help fight the fires, and fire extinguishers, and foam, all that sort of thing. Well, that was the engineering department's thing. That had to be there anyway, because you had to do it on a daily basis, checking firefighting equipment.
So now you got re-rated while you were there, didn't you?
I went on the ship as an LME, and then I got made what they call an acting POMMY, a petty officer mechanic brackets engineering local. That meant I was only a petty officer whilst I was on the ship, because of my training and my experience in the boiler room and whatever, and the job I was doing. And I got made an accident because one of our pommies went off, and the engineer said, "We don't need another one. We've got an LME that we're going to rate up locally." And then I was a year as an acting pommy, and then I got made a petty officer properly in March 69, and I had it backdated 2 months, I think it was. So I done, let me see, that was from March until September 69. I left there, and when I left there, I went to HMS Centaur, which was only overnight, in Portsmouth Barracks.
So what was your next posting going
to
be?
My next posting was then to HMS Sultan, which was in the training office.
That's a shore station, isn't
That's
it?
That's a shore station, and I was the engineer's... I was the training commander's writer. In other words, his secretary. There was a training commander, a lieutenant who was his assistant. Then there was myself.
Now, where is HMS Sultan?
It's a shore base in Gosport. Up near HMS, what used to be HMS Daedalus.
Now, what was... So this... And you went there, what, September?
I went there in September 69.
Now, what was this job like? I mean, is there much to tell about it?
Well, it was a job where I had a petty officer, another petty officer and a leading hand doing working for me. I had two civilian typists. And the main part of the job was to keep the engineering side paperwork running for the training commander. It's a big exam place, and what I used to have to concentrate on, because that was the only time that it ever happened, is when the mechanicians who do a 2-year engineering course, when they have their final exams, the papers used to come to me from Admiralty, and I used to receive them. And then I would check on the paperwork, whether how many envelopes there were, sealed envelopes, and then sign for them. Then I used to have to take them into the lieutenant, who was the assistant training commander, and then show him. He used to sign for them, and then he would put them in the safe in his office. And there they would sit until the exam, the day of the exam. Also, the same drill used to happen when the people on the nuclear course, which was a new thing over there, on nuclear submarines. It was they'd established a training school and everything in their own little right, and we used to get the nuclear papers come down for the people on these ships, and a lot of them was officers as well, engineer officers, commanding officers. They all used to have to come down. But the main flow of the thing, and this used to happen every 3 months, we used to get there. 6 months, 6 months for the mechanicians, and 3 months for the nuclear people. And I used to have to do the same drill, check the envelopes, blah, blah, blah. And then after the exams, all the paperwork would come back, all the exam papers would come back to the office, and we would put them in a sealed envelope, the lieutenant and I, and then I would take them up to Admiralty. Sometimes I'd take them on the train, and another time I'd take them in the car, whichever at the time was convenient. And it was the same with the nuclear ones. And then I'd get a lieutenant commander in the Admiralty to sign for them, that he'd receive two envelopes, sealed envelopes and whatever, and that was it. And basically that was the main thing, and just making sure that all the engineering courses and the people on them, because I used to have to monitor the people on them, were the right people, etc.
Anything happen? Any incidents?
No, I don't think so. Oh, and we used to do another job, another part of the job. I did go up to London twice with the training commander when we went and interviewed and negotiated training for Iranians, Iraqis and Arab navies. They used to come there and do the thing. But it was just our department that used to go up and negotiate the terms and conditions. It was just negotiate what courses they was doing and what we was going to teach them and that. And then that was down to them then.
Now, so you were there from September 69?
Yeah, until August 70.
So not that long, just about a year.
Yeah, yeah. And then, yeah, it was a year, wasn't it? Yeah, it was a year. And then I was given a draft to HMS Juffair in Bahrain. A shore establishment in Bahrain.
Now, how do you spell it?
J-U-F-A-I-R.
And that's Bahrain?
Yeah, and that's Bahrain. And that was on the staff of the Admiral Commanding Gulf. Admiral Commanding Gulf. I can't think what his proper title is. Admiral Commanding the Persian Gulf, anyway.
And what were you?
I was still a petty officer.
And you were an engineering writer.
I went to staff engineering writer. And the engineer, as a matter of fact, because it was being run down, and for changing over to the Bahrain Navy, the captain was the engineering officer as well, and him and I, I'm afraid, did not get on.
Now, why not? Because you normally seem to get on all right with them.
I don't know. I really don't know. He always seemed to as if he'd had an edge against it. I did complain once when I got out there because I had a phone call whilst I was in Sultan. I filled in some forms to go married accompanied to Juffair whilst I was in Sultan, and then I had a phone call from a commander who said he'd just come back from Juffair and that they was running down the houses, the married quarters, and there would be no accommodation for my wife and family, you see, when we went out there. So I went and told my wife, and she was very disappointed with this. But when I got out to Juffair, I found, they said, well, where's your family? Because they meet you, the Master at Arms of HMS Juffair, he met me at the airport. And he said, where's your family? I said, I've been told I can't bring them. We've got a four-bedroom house for you, he said. And I did when I was introduced to the engineer, the captain, I did bring this point up, and I said, and I was most annoyed with it, that I could have had my family out here with me. I said, and that's all changed. He said, well, you just can't have it, and that's all there was to it. And I think that might have set the local tension that was between us. And the main job there was ordering and seeing that there was always fuel oil available for the ships. If a ship came in, they used to send me signals, or send the engineer signals, who was passed straight down to me, and I used to have to negotiate with the Americans about who ran it from the American base there, Thompson Village it was called, negotiate with a chap to make sure that we got the oil in the tankers and that down the bowsers down to the jetty for fueling. And it went smoothly. There was never any trouble. And I used to deal with the army as well. The army had ships out there, landing craft and that, and they used to have to come to see me. And other than that, it was just a normal shore-based job.
What was the climate like? Did you?
The climate was very humid in the morning. I used to go to work in the morning sometimes, especially in the height of the summer, with a raincoat on. Because it was that humid, you used to get drenched walking up the road. But once the sun got over the yard arm, as you might say, it became quite hot. Occasionally, you got to 120 degrees, and we used to work 7 in the morning until 1. And then you had the rest of that day off. And the thing that we used to do in the Chiefs and Petty Officers Mess is that we used to play volleyball each night at 5 o'clock. It was just something to break up the monotony. And they had an SBS squadron out there, Special Boat Squadron of Royal Marines. And they used to come and play us sometime, and they never, ever beat us. And they was fit men. But we was that little bit more practice, as you might say. I used to get invited up to Thompson Village by this English chap who used to work for the Americans. And we'd just talk in general and talk about the fuel and that a little bit, not a lot, about the fuel and any more requirements that was done. And occasionally I'd go up there for a lunch. But I always asked the captain if I could go, because it was good to me, that was good manners.
Now, what you said that HMS Jafari was closing down.
Yeah, it was one of these things that it was at a time when I think that the Navy on the services were getting rid of bases abroad, cost cutting, as you might say, and we was going to turn it over to HMS to the Bahrain Navy. Because I still think it's a naval base now. So I found out from one or two people have passed through, and they've been there. And I think, if I remember rightly, it was the same thing that was happening. Remember when I said I was in HMS Terror? I think you'll find that the same thing was slowly happening out there then, late 50s, that they were slowly running down the shore bases, and I'm almost sure it was cost cutting. And when we left the mess, we had an auction, we had an evening's entertainment, an auction. We used to have dances on Saturday nights in there, and we had Army and Navy in our mess, in the senior rates mess. And I became.
What was the senior ratings mess like? The petty officers mess. What was it like?
It was a posh club. We had one big room with armchairs and settees and whatever as the bar, and then you on the left hand side of that there was the sitting room that was just for the ratings who lived in, even the people who lived ashore and used the mess. They couldn't come in there unless they wanted to see you, and then we had a dining room, and behind the dining room then we had another bar. A little bar with a dance floor attached to it, and that's where we had our Saturday night dances with the disco. But we also used that when we had special events on, like we used to dine the captain out once a year, and then we had.
What was that like?
That was very good.
Even though you didn't like him much.
The Admiral used to come, you see. The Admiral was the guest. Well, the President of the Mess used to look after the Admiral. And I got on famous with the Admiral because I used to play cricket with him. And we was opening bats at cricket, him and I. But I used to have to be the host for Commander Lawson. And unfortunately... Switch up. Yeah, and I used to have to look after the captain. But we were sociable. I mean, there's no sense in being nasty about it or anything like that. And then we had some entertainers come out, and we was the host to them for the inn. And I think the star of the show was Don McLean, who from Birmingham, the comedian, and the man who does the church things now on the radio. Other than that, it was just, we used to have to watch the American sailors when they come in, because their petty officers dress in the same rig as what the ordinary everyday sailors do. And there's very little difference, except for the number of stripes on their arm, apparently. And this was new to me. I didn't realise that. But they was quite good. And occasionally we used to have to entertain, if a ship was on a visit, an official visit, we used to have to entertain the senior.
How did you get on with them? I mean, the British Navy hasn't always gone on with them.
No, all right. That was all right. When I first got there, I think in the first week I was there, we had to entertain this ship, and we had a barbecue for them at the swimming pool, and it went down very well, and that was as good as gold in the mess, but not many of them used to come in. They never used to. I don't know why. Perhaps because I don't know. I always got on well with the Yanks. There was only one Yank I ever fell out with, and that was in the West Indies.
That's good. Yeah. Anything else happened while you were at Jufari?
No, not Jufair.
Jufair, sorry.
Yeah. No, not really.
You spell it Jufair.
Jufair.
Ah, right.
No, I don't think so. It was just once again, it was all sport and whatever, because you had a long day when you think about it. You started at 7, you worked till 1, and then the rest of the day was yourself, was your own. So we was always being invited up to families' homes on occasions. And but all right, it was all right.
So what was your next one? Now, how long were you there for? So
I was there. I was there from the 27th of August to November 71.
For quite a while.
Yeah, I should have done 15 months. Oh, I did get three weeks leave at home. Because I was out there. I was able to come home for 3 weeks.
But you never got your family out.
Never did get the family out there. No, and I don't think I was ever forgiven for it because that was all looking forward to it. I then got sent. I got drafted then from there to HMS Pembroke.
Now what's that?
That's a shore base in Chatham. It was the Royal Naval Barracks in Chatham, which was the cookery and the cookery training school and the stewards training school, or the waiters, whichever you want to call them.
Now, what do you remember about this? Were you an engineering writer?
No. This was totally different. This was a totally enjoyable job. I got made up there to acting chief petty officer, local. I started up a school's liaison job. When I got there, there was a leading hand and four ratings. And I was working for the Admiral of the Nore Command. Chatham is known as the Nore, N-O-R-E. The Admiral of the Nore Command. I went and saw this commander, who was the commander of HMS Pembroke, the barracks, and he explained the job to me, and then he told me that the Admiral had made an appointment to see me next morning to explain further, and I was to set up visits for school children. And cadets, i.e. CCF cadets, combined cadet forces from public schools, and sea cadets, mainly from the eastern part of the country. We was in that zone. I went up as far as Yorkshire, Lincoln, and all down Essex and whatever, and I was given some paperwork.
Now, this is visits to the cookery school.
This is visits to a naval establishment.
Nothing to do with the cookery.
Nothing to do with the cookery.